From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Robert Wexler Rea from the Duke University Medical Center is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about how the study of normal cells might lead to better treatments for cancer.
Dr. Robert Wexler Rea is an associate professor of pharmacology and cancer biology at Duke University Medical Center. He focuses his research on the cellular and molecular mechanisms that control normal development and tumor formation in the cerebellum. Dr. Wexler Rea, you and your colleagues published a very interesting paper in August in the journal Cancer Cell. The gist of your argument is that one of the keys to treating cancer might lay in finding the original normal cell that later gave rise to cancer. How can identifying the specific normal cells that cancer cells come from provide critical insight into how cancers develop?
I think the important thing to realize that not everybody does realize is that all cancers arise from mutations in normal cells, and that understanding how these mutations result in what we ultimately call a tumor, that is a mass of cells that are growing uncontrollably, that's really the goal of most of cancer biology. The interesting thing that's become clear over the last few years is that the mutations that drive cancer really just alter the behaviors that cells normally exhibit during their development. So during development, to make an intact organism, a person or an animal, you start with a very small number of cells, and those cells have to be able to proliferate to generate a lot more of themselves. They also have to be able to differentiate into all the different cell types, the neurons and the muscle and the blood cells. And at appropriate times during development, they have to be able to die. The signals that control these processes, proliferation, differentiation, and death in each cell, are different. And as a result, the mutations that would make a given cell give rise to a tumor are different. Because ultimately what makes a tumor is that a cell proliferates too much and it's unable to differentiate or unable to die. So if you understand the signals that make a normal cell, a particular normal cell, grow and differentiate and die, you really gain a lot of insight into the mutations that might cause that cell to become a tumor. Conversely, if you have a normal cell and you look at that cell and you understand its signals, the signals that control these processes, then you can almost guess what mutations are going to give rise to a tumor. And that's sort of the approach that we've taken. We've looked at cancer as kind of an aberrant form of development where cells do what they normally do, but they do it too much or too little. They grow too much, they die or differentiate too little. So when you identify the normal cell from which a tumor comes, you have a lot of insight now into the way that that tumor can develop.
Which type of tumor did your research group work with, and how did you identify the types of normal cells that led to the development of this tumor?
So the tumor that we focus on is a childhood brain tumor called medulloblastoma. Medulloblastoma is actually the most common malignant brain tumor in children, and it's a tumor that happens in the cerebellum in particular. The thing about medulloblastoma is that nowadays, with a combination of surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, actually a lot of kids with medulloblastoma can be cured. The problem is that with high doses of radiation and chemotherapy in particular, the kids that are cured end up with severe deficits that last their whole lives. So they have significant cognitive deficits, they have endocrine disorders, and they have an increased susceptibility to other types of cancer later in life. And so although we can technically cure these patients, we're really curing them with a sledgehammer, and we need to cure them with a much more finely tuned approach. And that's where understanding the signals that control growth and learning how to shut those specific signals off becomes really critical. So in particular, we studied a subtype of medulloblastoma that results from mutations in a gene called PATCHD. And PATCHD is a gene that controls the normal proliferation of cells in the cerebellum during development. And so mutations in that gene then, it's not surprising, give rise to or can result in tumors. Regarding the cells from which this particular type of tumor, medulloblastoma, arises, there have really been two candidates, and this has been a subject of debate in the field for about 70 or 80 years. One candidate are what people call multipotent stem cells, that is, cells that can generate all the different cell types in the cerebellum, and the cerebellum consists of about 10 different cell types, neurons and astrocytes and oligodendrocytes, and the neural stem cells can make those. And so there's a camp in the field that speculates that medulloblastomas arise from stem cells. There's another camp that says, well, most of the cells in medulloblastoma look like neurons, so maybe medulloblastoma actually comes from neuronal progenitors. Now, what I mean by that is that stem cells can give rise to all the different cell types in the cerebellum. Neuronal progenitors can only give rise to one type of cell, to a particular type of neuron. And in this case, it's a neuron called the granule cell. So really, the debate has been, do medulloblastomas come from stem cells, or do they come from granule cell precursors, neural progenitors? So to try to get at that, what we did is we knew that patients who have patched mutations develop medulloblastoma with higher incidence than the rest of the population. We also knew that mice that have mutations in the patch gene develop those tumors. But those mice were generated by causing mutations in patch in all of the cells in the animal. What we did is we generated new lines of mice that had mutations in patch either in the neural stem cells or in the granule cell precursors, the neural progenitors, and we asked which of those could give rise to a tumor. And what we found, surprisingly, was that the answer was both. In other words, if patched was mutated in the neural progenitor, in the granule cell, every one of the animals would develop a large mass of proliferating cells in the cerebellum. Many of those cells would proliferate for a little while and then stop dividing and differentiate. But in every animal, some cells would go on to form a tumor. So what that said is that granule cell precursors or neural progenitors can give rise to medulloblastoma. Then we looked at the effects of mutating patched in stem cells. And stem cells, it's important to realize, can make all the different cells in the cerebellum, including the granule cells. And so when you mutate patched in stem cells, you could predict a couple of different things. You could say, well, if you mutate it in stem cells, you might get many different types of tumors. Or you might only get tumors when those stem cells give rise to granule cell precursors that would then be equivalent to the mice that we made in which we mutated the gene only in those cells. And in fact, what happened was we mutated patched in the stem cells. The stem cells grew a little more than normal, and they gave rise to all the different cell types that they would normally give rise to. Most of those cell types developed normally. The neurons of different types, the astrocytes, the oligodendrocytes that came from those mutant stem cells were all pretty much fine. But the stem cells that went on to give rise to neural progenitors then went haywire. Those cells, as soon as they became granule cells, suddenly started to proliferate a tremendous amount and gave rise to tumors very quickly. And so what this says is that the mutation that gives rise to a tumor can occur either in a stem cell or in a granule cell, but that the tumor will only manifest, the tumor will only occur when that mutation is in a granule cell, in a neural progenitor. There's something very special about that cell and this mutation that work in combination to cause a tumor. And we're trying to understand what that is.
You were also quoted as saying that simply, and you addressed this earlier, you were quoted as saying that simply mutating a gene is not enough to cause cancer. And you also went on to say that cancer biologists need to learn more about the genes that regulate proliferation, differentiation, survival, and apoptosis in normal cells. Would you elaborate a bit more on these two important points?
Sure. So I think the sort of bottom line is that we've been studying for many years, we cancer biologists have been studying for many years, the genes that have been implicated as oncogenes or tumor suppressors in human cancers. And in recent years, we've been making mouse models in which we mutate those genes and show that we can create tumors in mice that are equivalent to the ones in patients. I think the lesson from the studies that we've done and that many other people have done recently suggest that a particular mutation, in the case of our studies, patched, can give rise to a tumor, but only if it occurs in the right context. In this case, only if the mutation happens to end up in a granule cell, which is sensitive to the oncogenic effects, the cancer-causing effects of that mutation. And so when you look at the array of medulloblastomas, and this is, of course, just one type of tumor, the same thing will be true for other types of tumors, you can't simply say, well, here are the genes that give rise to cancer, and by implication, we would treat cancer by shutting off the activity of those genes. You have to say, this particular subtype of tumor occurs in a granule cell as a result of a past mutation. And because we know that, because we know that tumors that develop from granule cells and that have patch mutations can be treated in a particular way, this type of tumor should be treated in that way. Not all medulloblastomas will be the same. Not all breast cancers will come from the same cell type with the same mutation. Not all prostate cancers, and so on. And so I think what's going to be important in trying to design targeted therapies to shut off the activity of particular oncogenes is not only to look at the mutations, but also to look at the context in which they occur. And the other advantage of that is that we know from studies of developmental neurobiology, in this case, we know a lot about the signals that make granule cells grow and the signals that make granule cells stop growing during normal development. Now, not all of those signals may be mutated in human cancer, but if you know that the tumor arose from those cells, you might be able to take advantage of what you know about the normal cell to target the cancer cell. And that's one of the directions that we've been going in our lab. So about half of my lab studies normal development and the other half studies cancer. And people in my lab talk to each other, and so ideas go back and forth. So we learned about a signal, for example, that is normally involved in shutting off the growth of granule cells in development. And we said, hey, what would happen if we took that signal and used it to treat tumor cells? And what we found was that that signal could shut off the growth of tumor cells as well. So here's an example of understanding the functions, the signals that control proliferation and differentiation and death in a normal cell that you can take initially, obviously, into animal models, but eventually maybe into the clinic and say, tumors that come from granule cells should be treated based on what we know about granule cells and not just based on the particular mutation that gave rise to the tumor.
Now, based on this research just published in Cancer Cell, what plans do you have, you and your team, to further advance the work that you published in that journal?
So I should mention, as in the context of the team, that this has actually been a very big collaborative effort. The work that was done in my lab was done by a really talented postdoc named Zhengji Yang, and he really spearheaded all the studies that we've done. But he was able to do them because we were in collaboration with a lab in Australia that provided some of the mice we used, Brandon Wainwright's lab at the University of Queensland, and a lab at UCSF, David Roach's lab, who incidentally had a companion paper in the same issue of Cancer Cell, where they took a somewhat different approach, but show very much the same thing, that there's an interaction between the mutation and the context in which it occurs. And so collaboration between these three labs has really led us to become interested in what is the relationship between the cell type that the tumor arises in and the mutation that gives rise to the tumor in that cell. And so, for example, my postdoc, Zhengji Yang, has gone on to try to identify what are the properties of the granule cell that are particularly important that make it sensitive to transformation into a tumor. And can we learn more about those signals and then apply them to approaches to therapy for this tumor?
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.